The time is 8:35 on January 27th, 2026, and I'm convening this video conference and telephone conference meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. This meeting is being conducted pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act and the Association's antitrust policy. All information disclosed or discussed is to be used only for the carrying out of the business of the association. Proper notice of the meeting was filed on January 20th, 2026, and published in the Texas Registry in accordance with the Texas Open Meetings Act. A copy of this notice should be attached to the summary of the official minutes of this meeting. A quorum is achieved as all seven directors have been confirmed as attending by video or audio conference. Also in attendance this morning, we have Executive Director Bart Bowles, General Counsel Dan Price, and Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association employees Jared Terry, Toppin Haggerty, and Brandon Nichols. Also attending from Texas Department of Insurance this morning, we have Van Hugo, Jeff Jones, John Walker, Sean Martin, David Ashton, and Caitlin Boehm. Okay. And with that, we will move to agenda item number one, is consideration and possible action on consent agenda items. The two items, and thanks, Bart, for displaying this. Item A is summary of the official minutes of the October 28, 2025 meeting of the Board of Directors. And item B is ratification of the payment of NOGLIS fees and expense billing for the third quarter. These are normal consent items that we have at each of our board meetings. And there is a suggested resolution to consider on page 1-1 of the briefing material. So if anyone needs time to read this, board members, and whenever you're ready, chair will entertain a motion in second.
All right. It's Jim Harrison. I'll move the consent agenda.
David Summer, second.
Okay. Thank you. Are there any questions? All right. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Aye.
Okay. The minutes, resolution is approved. Thank you. Well, next on the agenda is item number two, consideration and possible action on election of officers and the appointment of members to committees of the Board of Directors.
So, James, can I run with this?
Please. Yes, sir.
So what you see on the screen is a little summary of the excerpt from the amended and restated association bylaws. Just talks about the officer positions, the election of the term, and some of the requirements. It should be noted that one of the directors of the association, one of the officers of the association must be a public member, a public director. And we have always abided by that. So on October 29th, I distributed the guidelines for nominations and elections of officers of the Board of Directors. It's a policy, a guideline we've had in place since 2013. I distributed that to all the directors, and four nominations were received, one for each of the officer positions. On screen, you will see those nominations. James Huckabee was nominated to be chair, James Harrison to be vice chair, Ted Kennedy as secretary, and David Summer as treasurer. I have since communicated with all four of those individuals and confirmed their willingness to serve if elected in 2026. And I will stop there, Chair Huckabee, and see if you would like to do the officer resolutions first and then the committees, or do them both at one time.
When we do the officer resolution.
Okay.
So the resolution is on your screen, is there a motion for the resolution? And it's also in your briefing material.
Yeah, Frank Egan, so moved.
Okay.
Mark Williams.
Blake Patterson, second.
Okay, Mark is second. Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Well, thank you. The resolution carries unanimously. All right, standing committees.
And on the committees, it's fairly simple. The standing committees, the executive committee is in place and there's nothing to appoint there. The executive committee is comprised of the four officers that were just elected. Then when you have the assessment and investment committee, the audit committee, the personnel committee, and then there's one current ad hoc committee. So you will note that on two of the standing committees, one of the standing committees, we have four members currently. The others only have three, and with the exception of the executive committee, I would recommend as you consider these appointments, three committee members is appropriate. It makes it much easier when determining quorum, majority votes, things of that nature. Because if there's four committee members, you've got to have three in attendance, and sometimes it's hard. Three committee members, a quorum is only two. So what you see on screen right now were the 2025 committee appointments, and I will leave it to you, Chair Huckabee, to go through each of these committees and consider the appointments.
Okay. All right. On the Assessment Investment Committee, Jim Harrison, Ted Kennedy, and Mark Williams, are you three gentlemen agreeable to serve again on the Assessment Investment Committee?
I'm happy to do so again, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Thank you much. Audit Committee, and I agree with Boyd, as you see, there are four names there. Dean Fargo is.
There's only four listed there because I needed to show for part of 2025. We had a different chair and a different composition of the board. The committee.
So Mark is chair, Blake and Frank. Are you three willing to serve on the audit committee in those roles?
You bet.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you. Personnel committee, there are five names listed. Jim Lewis is no longer on the board. So one, two, three, four. So David, are you willing to continue as chair in 2026?
Yes.
Okay. So that leaves Frank, Jim, and myself. I will, so we want to keep it to three. Just whatever your pleasure is, I wouldn't have my feelings hurt if I'm not on that committee. I've served on it a number of years. But Frank and Jim Harrison, what is your pleasure as far as personnel committee?
Continue to serve.
Okay.
And I'm happy to continue as well, James, unless you would like a spot.
Chair Huckabee, to address the executive director search committee, that has four members, but we can continue with four members on that committee. I am a little hesitant to change the composition of the committee in mid-stride.
Right. I agree. All right. Well, then there is a resolution.
Yeah, they are blank.
They're blank. Okay.
And I did not list the ad hoc executive director search committee, but we can add that as we're discussing the motion.
Okay. So is there a motion at this time for the committees that we just covered, assessment, investment, audit, and personnel?
David Summer, so moved with the names that we just stated.
Okay. Is there a second?
Frank Beeman, second.
Thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any
Aye.
Opposed? Thank you. The motion carries.
Now, Chair Huckabee, I did write in the draft of this resolution to be for the standing ad hoc committees, but I did not list the ad hoc committee at the bottom of that resolution. I just want to ask, did that motion include the current ad hoc exec director search committee?
My motion intended to include them.
Thank you.
Thank you. All right, then we are done with, we're up to item number three. Consideration of possible action on reports and recommendations from the personnel committee regarding, and I will turn it over to David, our board.
All right, so personnel committee met on January 20th and discussed a number of items, and we'll report some to you here. First, on the benefits, compensation, and training components of the 2026 operating budget, we reviewed the benefits and compensation elements to the budget, and there were no significant changes or concerns. We also discussed the salary adjustments for staff, and those salary adjustments were designed both to reward the excellent performance of the staff during 2025, as well as to provide some stability during this anxiety-producing transition time to a new executive director. And the committee accepted Bart's recommendations for those staff adjustments. And that's all, those numbers are all included in the 2026 operating budget that will be considered later. If the board wants more information on those details, Bart could discuss those during executive session.
Okay.
We also talked about revisions to the employee handbook. We reviewed several minor revisions, as you see there. These were none of these were substantive, and they were just technical in nature. And so we do have a resolution that we would like to propose to adopt those changes. If you would like more details about those, you can ask Bart, but they were all minor and technical in nature.
Okay.
So we have the resolution showing.
All right, resolution on amendments to employee handbook. Is there a someone like to make a motion?
Jim Harrison, I'll move.
Okay. Second.
Okay, Jim, then Frank, thank you. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you. Resolution is approved.
Okay, in terms of performance evaluation for the executive director, as you know, you all received, board members received evaluation forms for Bart. I compiled those evaluation results. Bart also completed a self-evaluation, and those were all distributed to the board and to Bart and to council on December 11th. And we'll discuss the results of the evaluation in executive session.
Okay.
Then on various elements of the executive employment and deferred compensation contract of the executive director, basically two elements to that. First, just a reporting item that Bart received a 2.8% cost of living adjustment to his base salary that it, as of January 1, that's based on the Social Security COLA, and that's a required part of his contract. Then we also discussed the 457 retirement plan contribution, of which there is an automatic portion if Bart complies with certain elements of his contract that are required for that, and then a discretionary portion. And the committee determined that he met the requirements and should receive the automatic portion, and also recommended that he receive the maximum IRS allowed limit of $24,500, and we'll review a resolution for that after executive session.
Okay. Thank you.
And we did get an update on the executive director succession planning, but I believe everything is going to be discussed later, so I don't know that we need to say anything here about that.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Item four, consideration possible action on reports and recommendations from the assessment investment committee regarding the five items that are listed under item four.
Yeah, I can take it from here. The committee, Mark, Ted, and myself met last week. Pretty efficient meeting. So I'll have some reporting items, but there won't be any action items for the board. The committee reviewed the current net position on active insolvencies. We're in a very, I would say, comfortable financial position on all of them. We reviewed current investments and the maturity schedule of our investments. We conducted an annual review of the investment policy. No changes were recommended by staff, and the committee recommended no changes to the investment policy. We considered whether a Class A or a Class B or a refund was appropriate. We're not recommending any of the above. For Class A, we have sufficient funds in our operating expense account to cover anticipated 2026 expenses. So again, no Class A is recommended this year. Class B, as noted earlier, we're in a comfortable, strong financial position for all our active insolvencies. So no Class B is necessary at this time. And kind of related to that, I guess, not recommending any refund either, as I guess typically we'd only do that when we're doing a Class B. Lastly, we, I guess, heard an update on the 2024 assessment protest. Really no material developments there, so that was a pretty quick item. So unless, Bart, you want to fill in any specifics, I guess that would conclude my report of the Assessment Investment Committee.
No, Jim, that was good, very succinct. If there are any questions on any specifics, I'll be glad to field those for the board, but that was very accurate, Jim.
All right, thank you. I believe that
Chair?
Yes.
Okay, great. This is Ted. I'm coming up, and my microphone wasn't working, so I just signed back in. I'm glad it is now.
Okay, item number five, we will be going into executive session.
No.
Okay.
We're first just going to talk generally about the work of the committee. We'll talk about the details of executive session. I just want to build a record that of the committee's activities.
Okay. All right, Ted, Chair Ted, you're up.
Perfect. So the executive director search committee conducted interviews of candidates on January 5th and 6th. We'll report on our results and findings in executive committee together with a recommendation to the board, a compensation package recommendation, and discussion of next steps, timeline for onboarding and the like.
So we're on item 6-9.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Consideration of possible action regarding any matters presented by the Texas Board of Insurance.
And these are, of course, just the non-confidential matters. There'll be an opportunity later in the executive session to hear confidential discussion.
And the department has nothing for the open session.
Okay. Thank you, Bain.
Thank you, Bain. Item 7, quarter reports from the executive director on Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association activities.
And Chair Huckabee, this is my standard very brief report just on some operational matters that are not covered elsewhere in other agenda items. Just to remind everyone, we do have two vacancies on the board. We only have seven directors at current, but after Jim Lewis and Dean Frigo did not seek reappointment at the end of September 2025, those vacancies continue. So we have a small insurance company representative and public representative vacancy. And I know that Ms. Baim and her TDI colleagues are diligently working to find individuals to fill those vacancies. The assessment appeal, just gave you a little information there. We'll be discussing it, I think, quickly in executive session. General Counsel Price may have a couple of comments there. wanted to disclose to the board, our safety deposit boxes, the association has maintained two safety deposit boxes at Chase Bank downtown for many decades. And we store certain items from our business continuity plan there. And we also store the confidential recordings of meetings. We were notified in November by Chase that they are discontinuing all safety deposit services at that location. So Jarrett did visit the bank and cleared out our safety deposit boxes and brought them back to the office. We are now storing those recordings in the office. I'm weighing alternatives. We always like to keep those offsite, but that kind of limits what we can do now. But for present, the contents from those safety deposit boxes are now in a locked cabinet in our offices. Staff has begun a review of our hard copy and electronic files. We began an electronic filing system many, many years ago before the cloud environment we now operate in exists. And we have, it's really a electronic record management platform and a workflow platform. And the workflow components we not use, but we've had that in place for many years. And we're paying a significant amount of money monthly. And with our Microsoft Azure servers and how we're using those, there is some redundancy. So we are now going through a process to look at those electronic files that we're storing on that platform. They're in a separate set of Azure servers, but we think we can eliminate that platform. But before turning it off, we're just going through making sure that we have all the records. Anything that's unique, we keep rather than destroy a record and say, oh my gosh, what did we do? Where is it? So that's a significant review. That platform's been in place since 2013. We have already started on that, but it's going to be going on for a pretty good chunk of 2026. I have on screen there the NOLGA meetings that staff, directors, and general counsel attended. Also, NEIC meetings that just concluded in December in Florida. And also in that Florida meeting, I'll mention first, I had a workshop in San Antonio, October 21st. Jarrett, Topping, Dan, and I all attended. But then there was also meetings during the NEIC meeting in Florida in December of IAIR. It's our standard meetings, good committee meetings, good discussions, good presentations. The only thing I'll disclose, I was again elected president of IAIR and chair of the board of directors for 2026. And I agreed to accept that. It will not interfere with any of my association activities. If anything, it complements because it continues the relationships with a lot of receivers around the country, and the compensation is greatly appreciated. No, it's not, because there is no compensation. So there you go. Any questions on those operating items? That's all I have, Chair Huckabee.
Thank you. Item 8, consideration possible action on network penetration tests and report.
Okay, there were three reports generated by Clifton Larson Allen at the conclusion of their testing. The external penetration test, the internal penetration test, and the here it is, social engineering, and that's their actually phishing test. Those specific reports were confidentially shared with the board. They get into a lot of detail, but they're very thorough. They do disclose exactly the purpose of each of the test, their methodology for connecting those tests, and then the findings. It may seem somewhat alarming when you see they have four categories of findings: low, medium, high, and critical severity levels. And you may see high or critical thinking these are disastrous. Normally, you're going to see something like this in almost every testing that you have performed. there may be either a patch, an update, or a setting that needs to be adjusted. So I will say Clifton Larson Allen was very thorough on this. They kept us advised as they had findings. They would have calls with us and go over those. They did include in their reports that we are in it. Our activities and our security is at a level far ahead of any other organizations of our size. So I was very pleased with what we received in these reports. There are, and I'll mention on the first external penetration test, there were five specific findings that we will be addressing with our network consulting firm. Clifton Larson Allen put four of those in a medium severity, one in a low severity. I looked at them and I think they're all just settings that need to be tweaked. And we will be reviewing those with the firm. On internal penetration testing, this one was a little bit of a pain. It was very thorough. There were 56 unique findings, four severity levels. They actually found three that were critical. I looked at them. I didn't think they were critical, but we're still going to address all of them. I will say in this, one step of this internal penetration testing, first, we have to give them access. They ship a laptop, we plug it in and give them access and rights into our network. So they can't do any of this until they get into the network. So with that granted access, then they have these findings. And one of the things they do is they use my credentials to do some testing. Well, as part of that testing, it set off Microsoft Defender to do some security. So in the middle of the testing, because of all the attempts using my access, my Microsoft account was closed, not closed, but I lost all access. So for pretty much all one day, about 7 hours, I had no email. I couldn't attend Teams meetings. I had no access to our network. So it was a little bit of a pain. And it was interesting that both CLA and our network consulting firm says, wow, I didn't know Microsoft Defender would do that. It was just automatic. It recognized the threat and took me out of the world. So it was a good test. And I think it proved that our security is working pretty well. But these 56 findings will all be reviewed, as are what I just mentioned on the external network. On their social engineering and email phishing, I think they sent 75 emails. Only three of them actually made it through our firewall, but no actions were taken. They were then, nobody responded. The employees did a spectacular job. We didn't click on anything and respond to anything in those emails. And they did a pretty nice job of disguising them. So we will be meeting with our network penetration, our network consulting firm to go over all of these tests and all the findings. We will respond to all of them if we feel remediation recommended by Clifton Larson Allen is appropriate. And if so, what actions we've taken to implement those steps. And that will all be added to the reports and kept on file here at the association. So I think we came out in a very good position, and we have things to make our security even stronger, and we'll move forward to implement those. And if there are specific questions on any of the individual findings, I should address those in executive session because I do not want to talk about vulnerabilities publicly. But anything general about the testing?
Good report, Bart. No questions from me. Anyone ask? Okay. Item number 9, consideration and possible action on the annual review of the Board of Directors' fiduciary duties and the role and contact information for General Counsel.
Dan, do you mind if I introduce this?
Not at all.
So we're doing this just a tad bit different this year. This is the annual refresher that we ask Dan to provide to remind all directors of their fiduciary duties. And the one thing we did different is we included, and it's not here on this display, but in a revised packet that is on the website, Dan's slides, and I moved it in the present this presentation file to the executive session so we can display it there. But in the materials, right after page 9-1, you will see Dan's slides. So they were publicly presented, but they're going to be discussed in executive session. So if hypotheticals want to be discussed or questions arise, they are still protected by counsel. Anything to add there, Dan?
No, sir. That's correct.
So we will be having this presentation during executive session.
Item number 10, consideration possible action regarding annual evaluation of general counsel.
Okay. We did not have an evaluation of general counsel last year because we were transitioning between counsels. This was Dan's first full year as counsel of the association or general counsel. So I distributed the evaluation form to all directors on December 1st. I did receive 5 responses. I compiled those responses and confidence and distributed to the directors prior to the meeting. I will have those on screen and available to discuss during executive session. But there is nothing further for us to address here in open session, Chair Huckabee.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, item 11, consideration of possible action on corporate governance issues, including director's feedback, annual review of an update of business continuity plan, annual review and update of critical function reports.
Okay. Our customary practice is I invite via email feedback from any directors on any concerns or issues they might have about the conduct of meetings or the conduct of the board. That is done in advance of every meeting, and we keep this standing item under corporate governance at every meeting. I receive no feedback on any issues, concerns, or comments from the directors prior to the meeting. On the business continuity plan, I listed on screen a few things that we identified, staff identified, that should be updated. We had removed the references in the plan to our safety deposit boxes because those no longer exist. We added references to the use of the board of directors portal. We updated the roster of directors. We updated our inventories of equipment. And then we updated vendor contact names, email addresses, phone numbers, and ad mailing addresses. These are minor updates. There were no substantive changes to the business continuity plan to change anything in the process. So we did not include a black line of that in this meeting because these are non-substantive, and we do not feel there needs to be a resolution of the board because these are just very minor, normal updates. On the critical functions report, I do the initial review of this and then let staff come in behind me and look to see what did I miss or what did I maybe possibly incorrectly revise. There were a number of adjustments in the critical functions report and updates. We did include a black line, and you will see it's very detailed, and it goes on for, I think, 37 or 38 pages. We included it in the materials publicly and for any directors to review and add comments. I will ask first if there were anything in these materials the directors wanted to ask me about. As you may recall, between the policy and procedures of the association, our plan of operation, and our bylaws, this critical functions board is really one of the key documents that provide for transition of the association. Where the policy and procedures tells you things that need to be done, the plan of operation, the statute has very high level of requirements. This document details not only what supporting schedules are used and checklist, but who performs that work, what position, and where that material can be found. So it's fairly extensive, but it is a very helpful document. And I'll pause and ask to see if there are questions. If not, Chair Huckabee, there's a resolution 11-3 of the materials, and it's on screen.
Thank you, sir. At this time, I will accept a motion to approve the resolution as written on 11-3, also displayed on the screen.
So moved.
Okay, thank
David
you.
Summer, second.
I'm sorry, did someone second Frank's motion?
Yes, David Summer.
David, okay. I thought that was you. I want to make sure. All in favor of the resolution?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Well, thank you. The resolution is approved. Thank you.
Chair Huckabee, can you give me just a minute while I make everyone dizzy as I spin 37 pages ahead here? 37 pages in about 2 weeks of my life. There we go. We're ready on item 12.
All right, item 12, consideration and possible action regarding the impaired insolvent member insurance matters related thereto. Is this executive session or is this open?
This is open.
Open, okay, well, go ahead, sir.
Okay, first I have my quick summary to tell you. We have 14 active receivership estates. And when we say active receivership estates, that the receivership proceedings are still ongoing. There are additional obligations we may currently still be addressing from closed receiverships, but we are involved in 14 active receiverships. We also have four companies that we're monitoring that are in rehabilitation in other jurisdictions. During the first 11 months of 2025, since the financials for this board meeting closed November 30th, 2025, we paid policy obligations of in excess of $83.34 million. Our remaining obligations as of November 30th are $34.6 million. And these are all detailed in your board materials. The obligations report is on page 12-3 of your materials. During that same 11 months, we recovered $34.45 million in distributions of estate assets from receivership estates, restitution payments, and litigation recoveries, and a small amount of premium collections during that same 11 months. We included the communications activity report that shows our phone calls that we receive, our email visitors, and our email requests, and our website visitors. So this is what keeps Topping and Brandy busy, providing information about the association and sorting the information or requests that come in. We had no complaints during 2025. Since 2010, we've only had two complaints. I'll mention we did receive a complaint in January, forwarded from TDI. It was actually a complaint against the company Texas Life Insurance Company in Waco, but it was in error referred to us. But because we received it, and it had nothing to do with us, but because we received it, you will see it in the 2026 complaint log. Mm-hmm. Moving ahead, Chair Huckabee, I'll go ahead and talk about some of the insolvencies. Bright Healthcare Insurance Company of Texas. This is the last time I'm going to report on Bright to the board for a while because we have zero activity other than as the receiver is processing and reviewing the proofs of claims filed against the estate. They will occasionally refer a matter to us and says, is this a claim obligation that you've addressed? If not, and sometimes they just ask for assistance in evaluating what does this mean in the terms of the policy. So with that, and that's only been happening occasionally, we are still active until the receiver finishes going through those proofs of claims. We've finished all our claim settlements. We have no pending appeals, disputes, or claims against the association. So This is one we will just continue to monitor and work with the receiver. We are, I'll say it this way, let me go back. As of November 30th, you will see there we have about $1.9 million more in costs than we received in recoveries. We are holding our final early access distribution request until we get closer to the end of this insolvency work. And we anticipate we're going to make a full recovery from the SDR and the Bright Healthcare estate. So you will not hear me report any more on Bright until we get closer to the end of the estate. Friday Healthcare, or Friday Health Insurance Company, it's in a similar situation to Bright, that we are still just occasionally receiving inquiries from the receiver as they work through proofs of claims. But we do have one pending dispute, and it is a demand made of us by a large hospital group. This has been going on since 2004. They've made claims of us. We have responded repeatedly with pointing out flaws in their data that makes their claims invalid. They have come back and refined that request. We've responded to their refinement. We've made three settlement offers, and we're not getting any response. That is all because that entity, go down here, and their latest claim to us is $4,975,000. Our settlement request is far less than that, our settlement offer. They are refusing to respond to us until they can possibly reach a resolution of a demand made of them by the receiver for overpayment, a large overpayment balance. And there is some dispute between the receiver and this hospital group of whether that hospital group is required to pay those overpayments and are those overpayments appropriate. As their work continues, and it's been going on for quite some time, we continue to watch. We don't feel that hospital group will move forward to settle with us until they can reach a resolution with the receiver. Is there anything publicly, Dan, that we can add to that to help the board understand kind of this sticking point we're currently facing?
No, I think that lays it out pretty well.
Okay. And the assignment for the benefit of creditors proceeding in Delaware, the ABC, we call it, is ongoing. Dan will have a little update, a brief one in executive session, since this is active litigation. There's no questions. I'll move on to the other insolvencies. They will go a little bit quicker. Let's talk first about the two most recent insolvencies and very active insolvencies, Bankers Life Insurance Company and Colorado Bankers. As you recall, a very protracted moratorium period here that began when the rehabilitation started in June of 2019, went on for 5.5 years. A liquidation order was not entered until November 30th. Knowing full well that most of the, I'll say it's around 45,000 annuity contract holders nationally, their surrender charge periods had expired, their guarantee periods had been exhausted, and their interest rates had been reduced to very low, around 1%. But the moratorium prevented them from surrendering or doing a 1035 exchange to another company. So when the liquidation order came down, we were facing about an 18,000 queue backlog of requests for surrenders and exchanges. So the guarantee associations set up a mechanism to promptly pay these surrenders and exchanges. There was also a small block of life insurance that we began negotiating for an assumption reinsurance transaction. Let me give you a summary of where we are in this, and I will skip through the numbers here and show you a little different presentation here. I want to show you a couple of charts. So as of December 30th, nationally, $1.4 billion of benefits have been paid for both BLIC and CBLIC. And you see the breakout for each company there. Plus, I added the assumption reinsurance agreement funding that was just paid. This happened on January 2nd. So what we had originally negotiated is for all the life insurance policies to transfer from CBLIC to Continental General Insurance Company. What we found is even though most of the guarantee periods for the annuity contract holders had expired, a lot of those contracts were still sitting there. We were crediting them with 1% interest, but they weren't initiating a surrender in exchange. So we approached Continental General to say, would you also take what's left of the annuity contracts? And they said, yes. So that's where we have now moved all but a small amount policies originally issued in Guam. Any life insurance contracts with the insureds are 96 years old or older. And then anything that was in process but not completed, a claim that had been submitted but not fully documented and paid as of year end, was retained. So there are some retained liabilities, but very few. I want to show you how this worked out. You can see the liquidation date, November 30th of 2024. So as the guarantee associations, we started making payments in December 2024. What that small amount was, we had to scramble because a lot of contracts had required minimum distributions that had to be completed by year end, or these policyholders, annuity contract owners, would have had some penalties with the IRS. We did get all those completed. And then we hit our stride in January, February, March, April, and May, and paid the vast majority of these surrenders. And then you can see it fell off. So during 2025, except for the $8 million paid in December 2024, that was the vast majority of the $1.4 billion that went out the door. I just wanted to show you that volume because the first part of 2025, we were busy. A lot going on. Now, I'm going to back up and say right here, give you a quick summary. These are the retained liabilities you see in the schedule on 1215. So those three categories I mentioned of policies or claims that could not transfer to Continental General, 777 policies, only 18 of those were in Texas. So we have 18 policies we've retained and about $170,000 of liability. All the rest we have transferred. I want to move up a little higher and show you here in a paragraph here. You will see that assumption agreement mentioned, but we have paid of that $330 million in the assumption transfer, we paid $18 million. So with both of those, the association has paid $96 million. Oh, sorry, moved too far there. Here we go. $96,040,724 for these two insolvencies. I should mention that there were 43,000 annuity holders that were not completely covered or not covered at all by a guarantee association. These were because of Moody's adjustment or contract values in excess of statutory limits. Or you do recall we had some non-individually owned annuities that statutorily are excluded and we cannot protect them. That list of values was provided to the special master of the criminal case against Greg Lindbergh in North Carolina. And in December, those 43,000 annuity holders received checks totaling in excess of $157 million from the special master. Special master was able to sell one of the companies that they had received and recovered from Greg Lindbergh, and it made these restitution payments to those annuity contract holders. These values were based on the 11/30/2024 liquidation date values of the policyholders. They didn't get any values after that date. But for the most of the policyholders between that and the balances they received and payments from the guarantee associations, they were fully recovered. The good thing is those annuity contract holders are no longer claiming against the estate. Their claim against the estate has now been fully funded. So the guarantee associations are the only creditors. That resolves some disputes with the receiver. The Bankers Life and Colorado Bankers Estates also received a distribution from the special master of that criminal case. With those proceeds and with the resolution of the uncovered policyholders' claims against the estate, the liquidator did make the first week of December a $500 million distribution to NOLGA for the guarantee associations. The association's share of that, our share was a little over $27.28 million. Those are now in our control. So with the amounts that we have recovered there and the assessment collections that we have, and you net from that the payments we've made, we have about $30 million of excess funds for these two insolvencies. We still have additional obligations to pay. We're going to have a true-up to address with the assuming carrier, Continental General, in June. And once we get past that, the board will have to address, okay, we're going to have excess funds. What do we do with it? Giving you a heads up now. Questions on Bankers or Colorado Bankers? Oh, and I left out an item. These retained liabilities I mentioned in this table, how are they going to be handled? To make it easier for the policyholder, since all the policies transfer to Continental General, we are in process of negotiating an administrative service agreement with Continental General. Well, they will process and pay those obligations on the guarantee association's behalf. That administrative services.
Did we just lose Bart?
I think so.
Yeah, it looks like he dropped off. I'll give him a call, make sure he knows.
Chopping, you seem to be in control now. Is there anything you'd like to say or take care of while you have the
film? There are so many things. I wouldn't know where to start.
But I assume we're still being recording, so we should probably not go into this.
Correct. Because I am hoping that he will return quickly.
Okay, so apparently the building power shut down, and he is working his way back onto the meeting, so let's just give him a minute.
Okay.
I was just about to check the power outage map to see if that happened down there, so I'd answered that question.
Okay, Bart, looks like he's entering.
We're back.
Okay.
And the recording is back. Topping, can you confirm it's back on?
It never stopped recording on my side.
Okay. Then good. It was just me. We had a small power surge here and blackout. So I'm back. Sorry. Ice storm hits again. The administrative services agreement with Continental General I was talking about for the retained liabilities is being negotiated.
Just so you know, you're no longer displaying the board book.
Oh, thank you. Working on it.
We understand.
Can everyone see that?
Yes.
Okay. If this happens again, I quit. Just fair warning.
End of the year, though?
No. No.
Give 8 months warning?
Y'all can just continue without me. I'm done.
Okay.
I'm just glad this was a virtual meeting. That would have been too scary if we were all in the room when it went dark, Bart. I'm just glad we were all remote.
I just looked and I said, where did the power go? It's just, gosh. Okay. Administrative service agreement. Let's finish this off. I'm anticipating within the next 4 to 6 weeks that will be concluded. But much prior to the next scheduled quarterly board meeting. So I am asking the board to provide me with the authority to review that agreement when it's completed. And if I find it acceptable to participate on behalf of the association, so these remaining 18 policies can be administered on our behalf by Continental General. So I have a resolution to that effect. It's a 12-17 year materials and it's on screen now.
Okay. Hey, board, you see the resolution in your book, as well as on the screen. Is there a motion to approve the resolution?
Jim, so moved.
Thank you.
Ted Kennedy, second.
Okay, it's been motion moved and second properly. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Aye. Thank you. The resolution passes. Thank you.
Okay, I need to finish with two more insolvencies to update you. The third global bankers company, one of the Greg Lindbergh companies, was Southland National Insurance Corporation. If you remember, it was put in liquidation about a year and a half prior to the other two companies. So it's been in liquidation since May 2023. Batches of claims have been processed by two TPAs on behalf of the Guaranty Association, Southland Benefit Services, and Universal Fidelity Life Insurance Company. We have paid, as a system, 111 batches of claims. 410 claims have been paid by the association, $1.8 million. We still have substantial amounts left to be paid, but we have been working on negotiating an assumption reinsurance agreement for the remaining policy obligations. That negotiation is also with Continental General Insurance Company. Just so you know, Continental General is a local company. They're here in Austin. And they're very known, well known to all of us. So we're anticipating that assumption will be finalized in the second quarter of this year. And the board has already provided authority for participation in that agreement. So we're just waiting for it to close. Just so you're aware, the business of Southland National is prepaid burial business. So there are these prepaid burial life insurance companies and prepaid burial funeral contracts. So these two contracts are administered, or I say regulated, by two different entities. The insurance policy is, of course, regulated by the Texas Department of Insurance. The prepaid funeral contracts are regulated by the Texas Department of Banking. I've had some relationship over the years with other companies like this, with the Department of Banking, and we're known to them. We know their process. General Counsel Price and I had a conversation recently with the Department of Banking representatives and updated them about this process. We did not disclose to them the name of the company. We told them when the assumption is completed, we would do that and assist them in talking with the receiver. The prepaid burial contracts with the Department of Banking are regulated through or on behalf of a permit holder with the Department of Banking. Southland National Insurance Corporation is the permit holder. So the receiver is a responsible party to work with the Department of Banking on this to possibly transfer those prepaid funeral contracts to some entity. They would like that to be Continental General, but it is not necessarily tied and dependent on our assumption reinsurance agreement. Continental General may agree to become that permit holder and have those responsibilities with the Department of Banking, but that has not yet been discussed. So that will be coming, and General Counsel Price and I will be involved in that as we get closer to a targeted closing of this assumption reinsurance agreement. Just to let you know, that's going to require some time. And the last one I'll tell you, PIN Treaty is just rocking along. We were able to finalize and implement a revised administrative services agreement with Davies Life and Health US. You can see here on the screen how much has been paid by the guarantee associations. The claim payments and the cash buyouts total a little over $2 billion as of November 30th, where this association, $108.4 million. There are still 29,000 long-term care policies active nationally, 1,400 here in Texas, almost 3,500 active claims nationally, 240 here in Texas. This administration that I just mentioned, we just entered into a renewal with Davies, was for a 20-year term. There are some changes in compensation and reporting. I was part of the team that helped negotiate this, and now I'm part of the team implementing it. I have a call later today with the team that is overseeing the ongoing administration monitoring. It is a good contract, and it can be transferred if we were able to do anything ever with this business, but all the parties have to agree to that transfer. We are contemplating a possible transaction involving PIN Treaty, and I'll talk about it in executive session. So that is all I have on our active insolvencies today, Chair Huckabee.
Okay, thank you. Item number 13, executive session. Toppin, am I ready to read the language to recess to regular session?
Sorry, I was muted. Yes, recess the executive session. We'll start there.
Okay. All right, thank you. The time is 9:36 a.m. on January 27th, 2026, and I'm recessing the regular session of the Board of Directors meeting of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association in order for the board to meet in executive session pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act. The time is 11:27 a.m. on January 27, 2026. The executive session of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association Board of Directors meeting has concluded, and I'm reconvening the regular session of the meeting pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act.
Okay, if you'd like, I can take this over. So the Personnel Committee recommends the approval of the resolution on screen there, saying that BART has fully complied with the terms and conditions of the executive employment deferred compensation contract, and that we recommend that his 457B contribution be the highest allowed by the IRS, which is $24,500.
Okay, Chair Sumble, I will accept that as a motion. Is there a second?
Second.
Ted seconds.
All right. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Thank you, gentlemen. The motion is approved. Thank you.
And we do not have a resolution to display on screen, but I think Ted Kennedy is chair of the Executive Director Search Committee, and General Counsel Dan Price may have a recommendation for the board to consider.
Thank you, Bart. The Executive Director Search Committee conveyed its, having concluded its interview process, conveyed its findings and recommendation in Executive Committee, and is prepared to move forward with and acting upon a resolution as offered by General Counsel Dan Price. Dan?
Resolved that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association accepts the recommendation from its Executive Director Search Committee for the applicant selected to succeed Bart Bowles as Executive Director of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association. Further resolved that the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association authorizes the Executive Director Search Committee to make the offer of employment to the selected applicant and to negotiate the terms of employment with the selected applicant within the parameters specified and approved by the Board of Directors during the executive session without further action or approval required from the Board of Directors.
Okay, thank you, Dan. Is there a motion?
This is Ted. I'll make that motion to accept the resolution.
Jim, I'll second.
Second.
Jim, second. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
Any abstain?
Okay, the motion carries. Thank you. All right, item 15, consideration possible action regarding the following financials and accounting matters. Is that Jarrett? Who's making that?
Yeah, I think Jarrett's going to walk through a couple of highlights of the financial statements, and then we're going to talk about the operating and capital expenditure budgets for 2026. Okay. Jarrett, you want to go ahead and put up the financials?
Well, they
didn't come through again. So hold on just a moment. And I will make a quick change.
And before we go too much farther, Director Boterson, I saw you physically. Did you note that your abstention on that last motion?
Yes, I abstained that last vote.
Okay. You. Just want to be sure that's on the record. Thank you.
Give me just a moment. I apologize, I have to get a second file up. Give me just a second. And that page is corrupted as well. So I'm going to do it another way. Apologize.
I can share my screen, Bart, if that's quicker.
Hang on, I'm opening it with another application real quick. Okay. I'm going to put it on screen now. Just have to do. Here we go, Jarrett.
Okay. So I'm just going to point out a couple of things on the financial statements. We'll get through this pretty quickly to get to the budget. Let's go to the top there. Just want to point out our escrow account that we had been talking about for the Seablick and Blake insolvencies that we are continuing to pay claims out of that account, although it has really slowed down, as Bart pointed out earlier. Next time around, you'll see our recoveries, our reinsurance, and our assumption payments out of that account, and that should leave us with the balance that we're going to have to deal with later. Next item, down at the liabilities, you'll see a change in the current and non-current liabilities, and that's basically just a result of moving the non-current liabilities to the current liabilities once we knew the assumption was finalized and we knew the assumption amount for Seablick and Blick. So those moved from non-current, which we had projected those out over the life of the insolvency, to current because we know that we were going to pay those off. We'll go to the next page. This is the income statement. Just want to point out here that we had $34.4 million in recoveries. Most of that was from Blick and Seablick. Friday in bright, and you can see the amounts broken out there. Obligations, you can see those reductions there are due primarily to the paying off the Blick and CBIC claims and the Friday in bright claims to a lesser extent. I think Bart had pointed out that we paid, Bart, what was it, $96 million in claims for conceivably? Well,
through the assumption was on January 2nd, $94
million. Yeah. So that's where those numbers come from. And then I don't know if I've pointed this out to the board here recently, but due to all the cash that we've had sitting in our accounts from the Blick and CBLIC and the insolvency expense account, we've been earning quite a bit in interest because the interest rates have been higher than normal. So almost 4.4 million earned in interest over this year. And we've used that to pay off all of our operating expenses. So that's why we haven't had to do a Class A assessment and why one's not recommended for 2026. All right. I don't have anything on the cash flow statement. It's
how about the notes? Anything in the notes?
Yeah, right. Oh, right there. So since the last meeting, we've gotten updated numbers on the premium data. So I wanted to point this out. So this is the most recent premium data for our assessment limit, $1.8 billion. And the last update was $1.5 billion. So you can see our limit there has increased quite a bit.
So that's what we always say. This is the association's annual assessment capacity for all lines of business. You have to remember, I think the largest amount we've ever assessed in 1 year is $140 million. So the strength of the Guaranty Association system is displayed by this. We're not, we don't build up a war chest where assessment is needed, but when you have the assessment capabilities of $1.5 billion, it's a pretty strong mechanism.
So that's everything I have on the financial statements, unless there's any questions, then we can get to the budget. Okay. Bart, anything you want to say on the budget before I get started?
Go ahead.
Okay. So our budget for 2026, this is the operating budget, is $3.4 million. That's an increase of over last year's budget of roughly $865,000. I want to point out a couple of reasons why there's such a huge increase in this budget. That's almost a little over 34%. First item to point out is account 5085 National Assessments. That's our MPC fees that we pay for our participation through NOGA and all the various task forces. We anticipate that number is going to be quite a bit more this year due to the PHL and SHIP insolvencies. So we increased that $400,000 for the year. So there's roughly half of your increase.
And Jared, let me point out something on that. So you can see we include those assessments for in our operating expense. Now, we're paying these. They're our share of the MPC task force expenses, and we're not activated for those insolvencies. So these are paid as non-insolvency specific because the actual activation and an insolvency has not yet occurred. But we track those amounts. And when we are activated for those insolvencies, we now are eligible to do Class B assessments. And if we assess for a company or we receive recoveries, we will use those assessment dollars or recoveries to repay the operating account from these insolvency-specific funds. So I would say that $1 million is really not part of our overhead. It's because of the timing of liquidations. It's paid as an operating expense and then recovered later as a liquidation expense.
And that's why $989,000 of that is under the variable column there when you look to the right. The variable column is basically what we anticipate are going to be expenses due to insolvency work, whereas the fixed is, expenses that are just going to be fixed because we are in existence.
We can call that true overhead.
Yeah. All right. So the other big ticket item on the budget this year is a combination of employee benefits and compensation. So it's really accounts 5060, which are the insurance, the 401k and 457b, and the medical reimbursement accounts.
And Jarrett, we reviewed that in executive session.
Yeah.
There are some sensitivities there, so we don't need to give any real details.
No, I'm not going to give any specific details. Okay. And then the other account is payroll taxes 5115 and salaries 5130. And that is due to compensation changes and a new employee. Most of all the changes and assumptions that we've used are all laid out in the subsequent pages, but those are really the big items that make up $800,000 of the $865,000 increases. So I'm just going to touch on those, and then I'll answer any questions if anyone has on the operating budget.
Okay.
Okay, let's look at the capital expenditure budget next. So we have nothing here because we don't expect anything to rise to the level of capital expenditures. Our limit is $2,500. And so we do anticipate and have put in the operating budget buying some new equipment for a new employee, but we don't expect any of those individual items will be capital expenditures. So we have nothing on that budget. Any questions on that?
And then in the materials, Jarrett, you had these detailed explanations on each account.
Yeah, with the highlighted ones of any change over 10% or over. So if anyone has any questions, I'll answer them.
I'm just scrolling to them to give everyone an opportunity. If you had it reviewed this and have a question, feel free.
So that's all I have to report on the budget. I think we have a resolution for the adoption of the budget.
I had one question, Jarrett, and I apologize. You said the interest that earned allowed you to forego a Class A assessment?
Correct.
What account was that interest earned on?
So all that cash that we have on our balance sheet, we have in various interest-bearing accounts. And so the interest that we earn on those is allocated to our operating expense account. And that's what we use to pay our operating expenses rather than doing a Class A.
Understood. So it's basically operating funds.
All cash. Any cash investments. And so this has been in a practice association for 30 plus years now that the board made the determination while you're holding funds and you have it invested, any earnings you pay, you take those earnings first and apply it to pay your operating expenses and eliminate the need for Class A.
Thank you. Thank you for that explanation.
And that's all I have.
So, Chair Huckabee, the only thing we have is the consideration of the resolution on the screen. It's also 1518 of your materials regarding approval of the budgets that Jarrett has just described.
Okay, the resolution that's on the screen and also in your budget, in your briefing material, will accept a motion to approve the resolution that's on the screen and in your book.
So moved.
Okay.
Second, Mark Williams.
Mark, okay. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Okay, any opposed? Well, thank you. The motion carries. Thank you. Okay, next on the screen is calendar of activities and our next meeting date, which is April 21st, 2026 at 8:30 a.m.
There's no action necessary here. I do like to point out that after every board meeting, I do update the calendar of activities if there have been any changes in targeted dates and and issues that the association's committees or the board will be involved in. And so this calendar is just for planning purposes to look at dates to see what meetings are coming up, whether and where chairs of various committees or the board will be involved. We do update this and post it on the portal. So after every board meeting, and you'll see at the top, I always give an update date and what year is involved here. There are then excerpts of this taken. So you can see, for example, AI, personnel, board of directors. So there's a master compilation for everything. There's a compilation that only affects the AI committee, one for the personnel committee, and one for the audit committee. And so these numbered items do stay consistent per activity across all those various calendar excerpts. So just want to remind you, this is available for your planning purposes out there. We'll keep it on the portal, or if you ever want it, I can always send it to you. This was a Jim Lewis developed plan for him to help schedule his activities when he was chair. And it's just worked well for the association to always maintain this calendar. So the next meeting is scheduled then for 8:30 a.m. Central on Tuesday, April 21st. And Chair Huckabee, that's all we have for the directors to consider today.
Thank you. Any questions or concerns with the next meeting date or anything? Well, let's talk about the next meeting date. Is everybody good for April 21st?
Yeah, I think I'm going to have a conflict, Bart, with the New Mexico meeting, but
would you prefer another day that week? I really don't want to punch it a week later, because that leaves us crowding the end of the period to get a report to the commissioner. Is there a better day that week?
I could do later in the week, or I could try to do remote, I guess, Bart. I don't need to tie up the whole committee, but I've got a New Mexico board meeting that same day. And I know they're booked in Santa Fe, so.
What's the pleasure of the committee or the board?
I'm good the 21st. What about the other directors?
The 20th and 21st both work for me. I'll be attending an IRI annual meeting beginning the 22nd, but subject to travel, whenever I'm in the air, I could otherwise take the meeting remotely from Tampa.
I'm available on the 20th and 21st, but not the rest of the week.
As am I.
20th and 21st work for me.
Available.
Perfect. And what was that, Blake?
Either the 20th or 21st work for me.
David?
Either would work for me.
So, Jim Harrison, is it better for you to do this on the 20th?
Maybe keep it where it is, Bart, and I'll circle back with you after and figure out how to logistically make it work.
Okay. Then we'll leave it for Tuesday, April 21st.
Okay.
And Bart, I already told you about an issue with the next personnel committee meeting, but that will be dealt with at a later date. All right.
We'll be working on adjusting that.
Yeah. Thank you.
And Chair Huckabee, that is it for today.
Well, I will read the language then. Thank you. The time is 11:48 a.m. on January 27, 2026. And this meeting of the Board of Directors of the Texas Life and Health Insurance Guarantee Association that has been held pursuant to the Texas Open Meetings Act is adjourned.